Today's episode is brought to you by the Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. Find out more at canbyfoursquare.com or on Sunday mornings at 9 and 11 a.m. This episode is also brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768. Welcome to the Canby Now podcast,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you. So I'm not real happy about that either.
Doing, we had to learn how to win. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had to play four quarters of football.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip.
And if it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
We'd be doing an obituary of Scott Hatterberg right now instead of an interview.
The Green Planet, a small chain of marijuana retail dispensaries with stores in Milwaukee, King City, and Oak Grove, hopes to open their newest and long-awaited location between Canby and Aurora very soon, perhaps as early as next week. One twist, the dispensary will not be selling cannabis, at least not at first. Instead, its business will be cannabis oil, or CBD oil, and products, a federally legal derivative of hemp that contains no psychoactive chemicals. CBD is a popular natural remedy touted for many common ailments that you can find in everything from hand lotion to soda pop. The Green Planet, which is located in the former Topo Hill restaurant in Highway 99E, is turning to CBD to generate some income while they await OLCC licensing to sell recreational marijuana. Contrary to rumors, Milwaukee resident Miranda Murray says the Green Planet's opening was delayed not because of county zoning issues, but because of the sudden and unexpected death of one of the company's three owners, her husband, Justin West. His death on July 16th was, obviously, a huge blow to Murray and their family, as well as the Green Planet Incorporated. She said, "Personally, he was a great father to our three children, my best friend in life, my loving husband of almost 20 years, and a huge key to the company's success. It's been 6 months since my world shifted. But with great friends and wonderful coworkers, we're getting back on track." The Green Planet's completed application to transform the longtime diner and restaurant into a dispensary was received by the county in November 2017, which pushed the 150-day deadline for action in the case to, not kidding, April 20th of the following year. Not ones to drag their feet, county planning staff actually approved the application several months early in January of 2018, which was more than 2 years ago now. But, as Murray explained, the historic building needed a lot of work. Quote, "It was a complete overhaul going from a restaurant to an open floor plan," she said. "We have to thank our wonderful construction crew. They put in a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to renovate and yet maintain the building as it is." Murray said all three Green Planet owners grew up in the Oregon City and Canby areas and feel a sense of pride in having an opportunity to open a business in their hometowns. They had all eaten at the restaurant with their families growing up, she said of Topo Hill, which closed after 90 years in business when the then owner retired in 2016. The current building was constructed in the 1940s, according to land records. Green Planet purchased the 1.14-acre property for approximately $600,000. She says they hope to do a soft open very soon in anticipation of a much larger grand opening, which has not yet been scheduled. Most likely next week, though, she added, fingers and toes crossed. Not to get into the weeds here, But we have a bit more news on the cannabis front for you. The Aurora City Council made a decision this week that will allow medical and recreational marijuana dispensaries to set up shop in their historic commercial district. Dispensaries have been technically permitted in Aurora ever since the drug became legal in Oregon, but they were not allowed in the historic district, which covers much of the town and especially most of the small commercial locations that would make sense for retail sales of marijuana. There are currently no dispensaries located in the city limits of Aurora, but that, it would appear, is about to change. On Tuesday night, the Aurora City Council voted unanimously to allow dispensaries in the historic district under certain conditions. Dispensaries must not be located within 1,000 feet of a school, daycare, or other dispensary, and also may not be adjacent to a residential zone, public park, or place of worship. In Aurora's historic district, there is a unique zoning classification that allows for commercial use, but if the property is vacant for a year or more, it reverts back to single-family residential zoning. Under a new condition imposed by the City Council, dispensaries would also be prohibited from locating next to these properties. Marijuana sales would also not be allowed as a home business in the historic district, and any applicants and employees must pass a criminal background check. Hours of operation would be limited between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m., and drive-through windows would be prohibited. Prospective business owners may be quick to take advantage of the new law. Dalton and Samantha Justice, who currently work in the industry and live in Oregon City, had previously expressed interest in leasing commercial space next to the Aurora Colony Pub for a dispensary and have been active participants in the public hearing process. After Tuesday's decision, Samantha Justice confirmed the couple will be moving forward with their plans, including applying for a license to sell recreational cannabis through the OLCC. According to Coin's Hannah Ray Lambert, the city of Aurora already receives about $6,000 a year in state marijuana revenue. Canby, on the other hand, opted out of allowing dispensaries and therefore receives no portion of revenue from their sales. Prior to Tuesday's decision, local residents as well as members of the Planning Commission and Historic Review Board had expressed various concerns such as odor, traffic, and the impact it might make on Aurora's image to prospective visitors. The historic district has a lack of adequate lighting, parking, and police presence, with one citizen pointing out that the cash-based businesses such as marijuana sales can, quote, attract certain elements, while another cautioned against labeling petitional patrons as riffraff. We don't want to disturb what's been created with the historic district, Dalton Justice said at an earlier meeting. We're everyday people and would do everything to uphold that standard. Now, a story that will really have you saying, that's my jam. Mount Hope Farms, a family-owned small-batch heritage farm in Malala, has been named a winner of the 2020 Good Food Awards, which are held each year to recognize the nation's best artisan food producers of coffee, chocolate, cheese, and more. The multi-generational family farm won the award for their Aronia Hascap fruit spread. It was that product's second win, and Mount Hope's sixth GFA overall. Hey, that's pretty good, especially considering the artisan growers and jam makers have been in business only since 2016. Other area producers to be recognized include McMinnville's Alchemist Jam for their Raspberry Cardamom Rose Hip Spread, and Dundee's Briar Rose Creamery for their Maya Cheese, and Clackamas JAZ Spirits for their Verstovia Spruce Top Vodka and Cold Tree Gin. Mount Hope's special spread is made from two fruits you may have never heard of before. Aronia berries, also known as chokeberries, is it any wonder they prefer to use the term Aronia on their labels, are a small, dark purple berry that is native to North America and packed with antioxidants and natural health benefits. Mount Hope is one of the first growers in the Pacific Northwest to cultivate Aronia, which they also use in their Blackberry Aronia Lavender fruit spread, which also won its own Good Food Award in 2018. Hascap berries, also called honey berries, are a wonderfully exotic superberry that's native to Japan. The berries have a strange, almost rectangular shape, and according to Mount Hope's Laura Ellis, are bursting with flavor. Their sweetness, reminiscent of blueberry, raspberry, and rhubarb, balances nicely with the more tannic, almost bitter flavor of the Aronia. Ellis says, quote, "When these two berries are simmered together in our jam pots, the results are magical. This product is near and dear to us because we grow every single berry. It's also made in tiny batches, each jar preserved by us, each label placed by our hands. It gives us the chance to share a part of our farm and the Willamette Valley with anyone who tries it." Mike and Laura Ellis met at Eastern Oregon University. After their marriage, they returned to the Mallala grounds Mike's parents and grandparents began working more than a half century ago. They are dedicated to sustainable farming, responsible stewardship, and preserving their own and the area's heritage of small family-run farms. "We want to thank the family who has supported us and encouraged us," Laura says. "We couldn't do this work without them and how they took care of the land before us." Mount Hope promises their spreads are the closest you can get to nature in a jar. To try them for yourself, visit the farm's online shop at mounthopefarmsoregon.com or find them at the TMK Creamery in Canby and perhaps coming soon to Cutsforth Market. You can also hear more from Mike and Laura on the Canby Now podcast way back in episode 71, Mount Hope for the Best. All right, good news first. The estimated $2.1 million improvement project on South Ivy Street that the city and the county agreed to early last year, it's still moving forward. The project will include the addition of sidewalks, ADA ramps, a bicycle lane, and a new traffic signal at the intersection with Township Road near Bethany Church. The project will also include resurfacing of South Ivy between Highway 99E and Lee Elementary School, a section of roadway that is currently under county jurisdiction. All right, so what's the bad news? As we initially reported, the project wouldn't be starting in 2019 or 2020, but as we recently learned, it's not happening next year either. Quote, "It is anticipated that the Ivy improvements will be constructed in the summer and fall of 2022, said Joel Howie, a civil engineer supervisor for the Clackamas County Department of Transportation and Development. The project team is now getting into the preliminary design details and the project and expecting to have 30% design done in the next couple of months. Howie added that he anticipates a public meeting being held to discuss the project early this summer, though the time and location have not yet been determined. Concerns bubbled over recently about the lack of safe crosswalks and sidewalks along South Ivy, which is lined with residential neighborhoods and is a hub of pedestrian traffic surrounding Lee Elementary School and the Canby Adult Center and the Canby Swim Center. In the mornings and afternoons, teens are often seen crossing Ivy closer to Highway 99E, on their way to Canby High School, or headed the other way, towards Baker Prairie Middle School. In January of last year, Mayor Brian Hodson estimated that this is the project the city has been working on since 2012, though they were limited in how much they could do while the road was still under county jurisdiction. Per the earlier agreement, the city will take over ownership and maintenance of this portion of South Ivy once construction is complete. The stage, or at least the league, has been set for Canby football's first year at 5A. The OSAA Executive Review Board met in Wilsonville this week and voted to accept the alignment proposal from the Football Ad Hoc Committee as presented. This places the Cougars in 5A Special District 2 with seven other teams: Hillsboro, Scappoose, St. Helens, Forest Grove, McKay, North Salem, and the perennial powerhouse and predicted Canby rival, Wilsonville. The proposal was tweaked slightly from an earlier plan in which Canby would also share a district with two teams from Redmond, but the Central Oregon teams protested. After all, the pass is not the easiest thing to drive in the fall, and sharing a league with six Willamette Valley teams would have meant making that trip several times a year. In the new league, Canby swaps a trip to Central Oregon for one to the Northwest region, most likely either to Scappoose or St. Helens. Interestingly, this proposal also puts three of the four teams playing down at 5A into the same league: McKay, Forest Grove, and Canby, leaving out only South Eugene. Canby's move to 5A came upon a recent podcast by the OSAA discussing the committee's reclassification proposal with a member of that committee, Tony Smith, saying he thinks it will, quote, be interesting to watch. He said, quote, you know, you're talking about a school that has really an unbelievable tradition for the past 30 years that's just struggled recently. Following them this year, they were really starting to see some success again. I think them being allowed to play at 5A will be a real positive thing for that program. As the current head football coach and athletic director at St. Paul High School, Smith knows a thing or two about changing classifications. As anyone who follows St. Paul athletics knows, the Bucks have been bounced between 1A and 2A the past few years, as much as, well, as much as the bull rider at the St. Paul Rodeo. Host Bob Akamian agreed with Smith's assessment, pointing out that while Canby remains competitive in most 6A sports, in football they were in the toughest league in the state with perennial powerhouses Tigard, Tualatin, Lake Oswego, and West Lynn. That's a pretty good medium for them to be at 5A, Akamian said. The proposal will also cover the 2021 season as the OSAA preps for what many expect to be a much more comprehensive redistricting considerations in 2022 and beyond. If the Cougs win more than two-thirds of their game at 5A or a single playoff game at that level either year, they will automatically be bumped back up to 6A, where Canby currently plays all its other sports.
The Canby Now podcast is brought to you in part by Direct Link, where technology meets tradition. Canby's longest-running and most innovative communications provider for over 116 years, Direct Link has worked hard to bring quality services to the area at affordable prices. From establishing phone lines in the early 1900s to being the first gigabit internet speed provider in Oregon, DirectLink paves the way for new technology so our neighbors can stay connected. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
So, hey guys, it's me, James, again. I just wanted to pop in here one last time to remind you that the Canby Now podcast is supported by some of the most fabulous people in the world, including the Patreon that we're going to mention today, who's Renee Bogue, who also happens to be a good friend of mine and is just one of the most wonderful people that you'll ever hope to meet. So be like Renee. You can support the Canby Now podcast, and we rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we love. To find out how you can become one of the coolest people in the world like Renee, one of our supporters on Patreon, you can visit the canbynowpod.com/plus.
Thank you for listening to the Canby Now podcast.
Hey, on the Canby conversation today, I have a couple of, hippies in my... No, just kidding. That's us. Here in the studios, we have Parker and Riley. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Welcome on to the Canby Now podcast.
Thank you. Good
and
to be here.
We're here to talk about, small kind of micro home businesses in general, but especially what you guys do. So tell us about it.
My name is Parker Jasmer, and I run Bathe by Parker. I have Instagram, Facebook. Go ahead and reach out at Bathe by Parker. I just started recently, and I make soap and shower fizzies and bath bombs and chapsticks, lip balms, which were supposed to come out, but they didn't come out yet.
So okay.
Get ready for those.
Coming soon. So you just started within the past year or so, or pretty recently, or? I know the socials, that's how you hit me up, so.
Yeah, I was like, hey, I really want to come on the Canby Now podcast. I'm an avid listener. I have a lot of fun hearing about the local news.
Right.
And I'm just now starting this business, and I think this is something we could talk about. And so here we are.
Yeah, so I have heard that there is something 600 very small either home businesses or side businesses, side gigs, just in and around Canby.
Yeah, in and around Cambie, I would believe that. That's like such a shame. I haven't heard. I wish people would reach out. It's like, I want to try everyone's products.
Not everyone's on the socials and things. Yeah, like you are. But yeah, that number I've heard from multiple people, that's not just purely pulled out of the air. Maybe they pulled it out of the air, but then they gave it to me. So
right. Well, you still got it either way, right? Yeah. So once you get it, you got it.
That's a bunch of small like businesses for such a small town.
Small mm-hmm. town. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit as far as, at least in your experience, what do you think attracts people to doing something like that?
Well, I think that when you start to look at the stuff that's inside of your soap that you're using, like there's this very popular advertisement out right now by this guy who started his own soap company that's huge. It's like, you know, Walmart sized. He talked about how lots of our soaps are classified as synthetic detergents.
You mean
detergents.
The business is Walmart size, or like the bars of soap are the size of a Walmart?
The business. He's like, he's in big business. He's not a local guy, but okay. People are starting to catch on, you know, like we're slathering stuff on our bodies that's not good for us. Palm oils, you know, stuff like that, that we don't really want. One thing that I did with my products.
I just stopped showering is how I got rid of it. So
yeah, I mean, that's the best way to do
I
it.
I was wondering why you guys are so far away, but now I guess I
we don't bathe.
Yeah, we don't either.
Okay, good.
The margins aren't there yet.
They're going to have to like condemn the studio when we're done.
They're going to have to fumigate it and come in with hazmat suits.
Yeah.
If you do some research, and I don't think a lot of people want to bathe in cornstarch, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was looking at this and I was thinking, well, what do I do? So I was like, okay, here's what I can do. I can try to make it without. And it's hard, but I did it. I took out cornstarch and I found a way to get them to like, you know, form and stay tough. So I actually brought a few products to show you.
Cool. Yeah, let's check it out. So you just have like do different experimentation and stuff?
You kind of have to. Yeah. So my parents were kind enough to lend me a part of my garage. So I have it like kind of cordoned off.
Yeah.
And I have tables and it's sanitary, I promise.
Yeah. No. So while you're doing that, Riley, why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of your involvement and how Parker got you into this whole hippie thing.
So we were like best friends and we hang out a lot. So he told me to come over one day to help him make his bath bombs, and he's a lot better at making them than I am.
Okay, so you had like tried kind of done your own experimentation in making stuff?
Like whenever you make them, you have to mold them really tightly and make sure they're really compact. And then I was there with him. He was like testing the fizziness of them and different waters and everything like that, and like the different substances in them.
Yeah.
And also we had a really good time trying to color the soap because soap needs like a really specific coloring, because we would put in one color and it would be like the complete opposite.
Yeah.
But we had a lot of fun like experimenting and everything like that. And Parker's like always been really creative. He's like part of the 600 businesses, he's probably had like 5, like 10, because he used to make scrunchies, and he makes like reusable grocery bags now because of the new bag ban.
You'll get to see one of those as well. That.
No, I'm just kidding.
You'll get to see one of those as well. They're right down there.
Oh, cool.
Riley, assistant.
That's really nice. That looks like I don't mean to offend you. This looks like a professional made it. Like,
thank you. I'm almost a professional.
Yeah. No, that looks fantastic.
So you can like take a smell or a sniff of those, and they actually have like a really
thank
good
you.
Smell.
And that bag is made out of soap, yeah?
Yeah.
Everything's made out of soap. That's something I've been struggling with, is I want to be able to find a way to do zero plastic.
Here's a soap that you could smell.
Okay. What is this thing I'm smelling now? It's
a lavender bath bomb.
Okay. Stick your nose inside the that hole there.
What hole? Oh, this one here?
On top.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anytime I've been invited to stick my nose in a hole, it hasn't gone well. But I'm gonna
this will
this
be the
shot.
First time. This will be. We're gonna take care of you.
Okay.
You're safe.
That smells really good. That makes me want to eat it. But I probably
well,
shouldn't.
You can have it, because any of these products that you want today, I'm gonna give to you.
Oh, okay.
Because you need, you know, you need an opportunity. To
I
try
do
what
to
what I'm
try
with.
Maybe to try showering again if I ever get there.
So
okay, so let's talk first about this bath bomb thing, because I'm not a bath bomb guy. So do you. This is huge. This is just for one bath?
Mm-hmm. And it's a great price. Only $5.
Okay. This is like baseball size.
I mean, you could cut it up, I guess, if you wanted to split it up too.
I've had a lot of people cut them in half.
Yeah.
They can't take the scent. The citric acid is an acid, and the sodium bicarbonate is a base.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they interact, have you ever done a baking soda vinegar volcano?
Of course. I have gone to grade school.
Aren't they fun?
Yeah. I'm just smelling
this. It's like
this.
That in your bathtub.
Yeah.
Except this one's purple and it smells like lavender, and it's good for you.
There's no vinegar in it though.
No vinegar. The citric acid is the acidic part that reacts with the baking
soda. There's actually like little pieces of lavender itself in the bath bomb.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Okay, yeah, flowers. I can see that. So it's not essential oil, it's actual lavender.
It's both, actually. Both.
Yeah. Cool. You had food grade coloring and coconut oil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that's very attractive that my customers tell me about my bath bombs and like my friends. I've probably given more away for free than I've sold just because I just really want people to be able to try these.
Yeah.
The coconut oil moisturizes your skin. So when you come out, it's like, it's amazing. Your skin is just so soft.
Yeah. Thank you, Riley.
She's my assistant. I've tried them and he's given me some for like random holidays, my birthday or Christmas, and I love using them because compared to the other bath bombs I've used, whenever I come out of the bath, I don't have to put lotion on. Like I feel very moisturized, and I think it's from the coconut oil itself and the essential oil too.
Yeah.
When he makes the bath bombs, it's funny because you think that you'd put like a couple drops, but he like puts all of the essential oil in because he wants to make sure like you get what you're paying for, you know?
Yeah.
And you enjoy it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool. And I just really appreciate and love what you do as far as like, we consume and we use so many products without really thinking about like what's in them, what we're putting on or even in our bodies. And it's cool that you have not only like dove into that for your own health and your own lifestyle, but to, you know, potentially help people you love and other people you come into contact with. So
for sure.
Appreciate that. The bath bomb thing, like, tell me more just about this like kind of lifestyle. Cause again, I'm not a bath bomb guy. So this is for like this people that tough, just,
yeah.
Like, I mean, is it like I had a bad day, I need like a special bath type of thing?
For sure.
Oh, for
sure.
It's
like you fill up your bath. Like
they're doing this every day type of thing, right?
I mean, you can. And I really, if you're going to be buying them for me, I very much encourage it.
Twice a day, yeah.
It's like you pamper yourself. You fill up your bath, you put a bath bomb in, you put on candles, you know, like it's like a very good stress reliever for sure. Yeah. Right.
So, like when I'm having, you know, just like a couple bottles of whiskey, you know, just kidding.
For sure. Yeah. there's like a scent that he made specific for men if he didn't like any of like the girly or fruity ones.
Yeah, the dark green one. It's called PCT, not to be confused with PCP. And it stands for Pacific Crest Trail. It's
differently.
It's made by the essential oil is made, that's the one, by squeezing pieces of bark that come from trees in this area. So that should smell like when you walk through the forest here in Canby. Or when you walk anywhere in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh my gosh, that smells so good. I love that one. Yeah.
Do you? I've had a lot of compliments on that one. I like to make them strong. Do you see how strong they are? They're strong.
Yeah. No, it's very strong.
That has to dissolve into all of your bath water.
So it's an essential oil that's made from crushing bark. Even that sounds like really manly thing to do. Like,
oh yeah,
they just squeeze oil out of bark.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. For sure.
Good point.
Yeah. Very cool.
So
I love that one. I'm gonna keep that one.
Keep that one.
If somebody's looking for something more like every day, I guess like a shower fizzy, because it it's more for like the aroma. You just set it on the floor of your shower and your bathtub, and then when you're taking a shower, like the aroma from the oils kind of rise up from it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of more maybe an everyday thing. You could split that up into a few pieces too.
Cool. I want to ask you about maybe one of the more challenging parts of having your own business, having a really small business, right? Because that's probably like where a lot of people fall in terms of like how they define success, maybe. Like if they have been putting, like you mentioned, like a lot of money, a lot of time. You have a product that you're really happy with that you feel like should be like in all the stores or whatever, like just making you rich, and it's not happening, and you're not Walmart sized, you know?
I don't know if getting rich is the goal. I'm not saying you said that.
No, please.
I don't think that getting rich is the goal. I'm so excited just to help people. And I think that, so like you guys were talking about aromatherapy and I wasn't really involved and I was really happy that someone said that, because aromatherapy is something that's very, you know, underrated. And so trying to explain that to people is, it's hard because it sounds like hippy dippy. I'm Parker the hippie.
It sounds super hippie. So what is it?
Aromatherapy, it's smelling good smells makes you live a better life.
Okay.
I think anyone at home right now can swipe up and then go on their, you know, on their Safari or on their Google Chrome and look up the benefits of aromatherapy. It can really improve your life. Studies have shown that it really helps. But moving on to your bigger question, what's hard about running a business?
Well,
marketing.
What's hard? Okay, so, but before we go there, how do you deal with, I guess, disappointment or maybe making your priorities more match what is, I guess, happening with your business or possible,
I guess? Yeah, because, like, I think that everyone that starts a business, they're like, okay, I'm going to end up in the stores in 2 months, right? I think that's kind of what you're getting, like.
Or even just, I want this to be able to do this full time, you know, which mm-hmm. even is not possible in a lot of cases.
Well, I do it full time. I no longer work for Subway. When I first started, I was working for Subway. And so now this is kind of what I dedicate most of my time to, is just mm-hmm. making products and like just doing what I love. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it comes down to.
Cool. I can't wait for your you know, Italian urban bread smelling bath bomb. So.
Yeah. Like a spaghetti one.
No, from Subway.
Oh, my Italian herbs and cheese bath bomb. Yeah, well, I think there's a patent on that. But
we don't want to get Subway's lawyers after us. So
I know we don't want a Subway lawsuit.
Yeah. So marketing, you're saying, is your biggest challenge.
Oh my God, it's so difficult. So you pay for ads on Instagram so that your friends will see them.
Yeah.
And it's not expensive, but it's not cheap when you have to run ads. And so it'll bring your post up as a sponsored post and mm-hmm. they'll be able to like click on it. More people will see it.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way that I've been really able to get my name out there.
But also, then it's like how much return on investment do you get from that? Like they not see your good. Post, but that doesn't mean that they're buying anything or that you're making anything back from that.
The most surprising thing is I've found that when I sponsor a post, it's never the people that looked at the post that buy something. It's their friend that they told that they saw this one company in this one place, and then they come and they buy something. They're like, yeah, my friend saw your post.
Yeah.
I was like, thank God, because at least one person.
Tell me about the process. How do you make a bath bomb?
Okay, so I will give you a full
trial and error process. First.
Trial and error for sure.
A broken heat gun.
Riley broke my heat gun when she was helping me.
Yeah,
it wasn't mine. I borrowed it from my neighbor.
Oh no!
So now I had to buy one. He still doesn't know the process of making a bath bomb. So first, you get a container, and then you would get your baking soda and your citric acid and your Epsom salt. Hopefully, if you're gonna make these at home, hopefully make them all organic because you're making them for yourself. Might as well put some money into it.
We that smells really good too. What is
virgin
this?
Virgin coconut oil.
Lip balm.
That's lip balm. So okay. Just rub your finger on it and warm it up because it's going to be its virgin voyage.
It's going to be a what now?
It's going to be its virgin voyage.
Oh, okay.
You have to warm it up at first. It's all natural product. Beeswax and coconut oil is what's in that.
Okay.
And then these tubes here to your right. One of them is going to be peppermint bark and one of them is going to be vanilla cocoa.
It's like tingly on my finger.
Good. Good. Good.
It feels really good. I really like it.
It's lemon. You would mix together your ingredients.
And it could be like any container?
Any container.
Yeah.
Something big enough to hold like a lot of powder.
I have these ice cube trays that are shaped like a Death Star.
Really?
Yeah.
You could actually
probably do that. So what I would do if I were you is I would get a big bath bomb bowl. It would be. It would be probably the best one.
No.
Besides mine, of course, right? So you get a bowl, you mix your things together, you add in hopefully coconut oil. Some people add in jojoba oil or almond oil. Avocado oil is like the newest thing, mm-hmm. of course. So you add that in and you mix it up and then you get your two halves of like a Christmas ornament is what they're called. It's like a mold.
Okay.
And then they have stainless steel ones, which is what I've moved up to once you get a little bit more serious. And once you get more serious at bath bomb making.
You need a new heat gun too.
Right. Yeah. And you buy your second heat gun. Thanks, assistant. So I put my bath bombs together. You just like scoop it up in both sides and you push together as hard as you can. And you have to be very careful when you pull it out and you set it down. Hopefully you'd be wearing gloves or, you know, washing your hands if you're selling these to people.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing it for yourself, pick your nose, you know, scratch your armpit. Who cares?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I'm not talented enough to do that part, so I just shrink wrap things.
Yeah, okay. Riley just breaks guns.
Yeah, for sure.
No, I'm not mad. Anyone listening.
You've only mentioned it like 12 times at this mm-hmm. point, so. Yeah.
Sometimes we'll go over there and help him, and he's like, yeah, I could really use your guys' help. And then we'll be like putting labels on bags because like we can't do it properly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you like to smell more of our scent profiles?
Yeah, sure. I'm really...
you're in that
I'm feeling it.
You really like that one.
Yeah.
This is kind of like
there might be something similar to this aromatherapy thing after all.
There's so, like a cinnamon.
Cinnamon?
Yes.
Okay.
So another thing I should probably tell you is when you're buying a product that's super like natural and doesn't contain cornstarch, namely some of the humidity in the air where we live in Oregon, as it's raining, mm-hmm. which is, I mean, you can't really escape it. It will start to activate your bath bomb, and your bath bomb can puff. And that's why I shrink wrap them. Yeah. So sometimes the shrink wrapping even isn't enough, but looks like that one came apart a little bit.
Yeah.
That's, when I mess up, like, I'm not afraid to talk about it. Get you a new one.
Like a Christmas cookie, that one.
I love this scent. It's cucumber melon. Okay. It's like really strong. This one's super strong. It's lemon. Uh-huh. And I really like this one too.
All of these scents are really strong. I think I'm getting high.
Are you getting high?
Yeah.
And like, it's really good. Yeah, that
one's good. I like the cucumber melon.
You can get a lot of the different scents in different products too. So you could like pair them up together.
Yeah.
Which is super nice.
What's the weirdest scent that you've tried to do?
Oh, the weirdest scent?
Yeah.
What do you think, Riley?
I don't know.
I think
like
cinnamon.
Wet dog or like...
Oh,
yeah, smell that one was strap. Not a hit, yeah. actually. Yeah.
Yeah, burnt wig.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That is really strong.
Yeah.
The lemon one? Yeah, it's strong. Oh, I put a drop of essential oil in it so that you could smell Ooh. It.
Yeah.
Smell the other one.
Mm. I really like this one.
That one is good.
Mm-hmm.
Vanilla coconut. I like that one.
Do you have another lemon one inside that bag, Riley, that you can smell I didn't add essential oil to? We were getting ready to go, and I was like, well, I don't know if we'll be able to smell it through both layers of plastic. Let me
that
put a drop of essential oil
in
inside.
Okay. Yeah, that one's a little more mild.
I take it back.
Yeah.
Isn't it pretty?
Yeah.
Riley
it
made that.
Really nice.
You can tell Riley made it because it doesn't look perfect.
I didn't shrink wrap that, but I mean.
Oh, that was such a dig. Did you hear that?
Yeah. No, it's okay. It's true.
It's not bad.
I'm really bad at making the things.
Yeah.
Oh, shots fired here in the studios.
When we tried to make our first soap, we used the same coloring that we did for the bath bombs, and we'd put in like blue and it would be brown or red and it would be green. So.
Yeah. So we use honey glycerin soap base.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you request it, I can make it for you. It's shaped. Butter soap base.
Nice.
And you would melt that and you'd add in your colors. Well, soap gets very, very, very hot when you melt it. So me and Riley
were
adding in this colorant, food safe, mind you. And so you can eat it, but
don't.
Not the soap.
Right.
Don't do it. And it was turning, like, you'd add blue and it would turn green. You'd add pink and it'd turn brown. It would like boil the, I don't know what it was doing.
It would denature the whatever molecules.
The proteins and the
you're talking all chemistry.
It breaks the peptide bond.
Actually, denature it. It changed the entire color.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if there is, this is just like a mad laboratory. You guys got to, if there's ever like an explosion, like somewhere in the, that makes Cambi smell like frankincense and lemongrass,
house.
I'm calling the police and telling them
that's
to go
my
to
meth
your
lab.
Address.
That's my meth lab.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, thank you guys so much for your time. We're going to wrap things up here, but did you have anything to add before we go?
Just thank you. I'd like to shout out my social media.
Yeah, please.
Look up local businesses, support them.
Yeah, yeah. Support local.
Support local.
Yeah.
Of course.
It never hurts to keep, I buy all this stuff for my products
and
mostly from around
here.
And
the people, you know, that are doing it out of love and like, you know, passion, kind of like you.
And hard
like,
work. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard work.
Sure.
Yeah. But I'm having so much fun.
Yeah. Stay tuned for the grocery bags.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank
bomb,
you,
I guess.
Riley.
Oh, yes.
I don't know. I just feel blessed to be able to meet you. I mean, look at what it's brought me. It's brought me here in Cambi Now Studios with you.
It's super cool. Like a really cool couch.
It connects
pretty pillows.
People. It does.
Yeah, I don't like the pillows.
Really?
Can you tell? Especially that weird fox.
Yeah, that one's weird.
That's all Tyler.
The
looks
cat's
like he
super
smoked
cute.
Something.
Yeah. Maybe
right?
he did.
Maybe he did.
Maybe he did.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to clean this up. I don't know what Tyler's going to think of all these smells in here.
What's the Instagram?
Bathe by Parker. BathyParker on Instagram. Thank you, everyone.
And now a PSA from the Cambi Suicide Prevention Task Force.
Hello, my name is Ray Keene.
Hannah.
Doug Poppin.
My name is Ashley.
Scott Taylor.
My name is Dawn Deppner.
My name is Tracy Hensley.
My name is Lauren Sweet.
Rochelle George.
Hayden Hensley.
My name is Kate Loshkin.
Willie Boyd.
My name is Layla Wood.
Hello, my name is Sean Varwig.
And we appreciate the opportunity to speak with you about a very important subject. That is suicide prevention.
Risk factors for suicide include family history of suicide,
family history of child mistreatment,
previous suicide attempts,
history of anxiety, depression,
history of alcohol or substance abuse,
feelings of hopelessness,
impulsive or aggressive tendencies,
local increase of suicide,
isolation, a feeling of being cut off from other people,
barriers to accessing mental health treatment,
loss, relational, social, work, or financial.
Physical illness.
Easy access to lethal methods.
Uncomfortable seeking help because of stigmas.
So what are the warning signs for suicide?
The warning signs for suicide include talking about wanting to die or kill themselves.
Looking for a way to kill themselves, like searching online or buying a gun.
Talking about feeling hopelessness or having no reason to live.
Talking about feeling trapped or in unbearable pain.
Talking about being a burden to others.
Increasing the use of alcohol or drugs.
Acting anxious or agitated. Behaving recklessly.
Sleeping too little or too much.
Withdrawing or isolating themselves.
Showing rage or talking about seeking revenge.
Extreme mood swings.
So what can we do if someone that we know is at risk of suicide? Well, it's important to ask the person privately and directly if they are feeling suicidal or if they have been thinking about suicide. It is a myth that talking directly about suicide will put the idea in their head. Instead, discussing suicide openly can give the person the opportunity to take first steps toward getting the help that they need.
I've noticed that you haven't been yourself lately. Is everything okay with you?
I'm worried about you. I'm wondering if we can talk about what's troubling you. You've seemed really down lately. I'm worried that you might be thinking of hurting yourself or suicide. Can we talk about this?
So, how can we show that we care? Let the person at risk know that you are concerned and that you care. Often, knowing another person cares enough to become involved and to listen to them can be a great comfort to someone who is suicidal.
Let the person know that you have noticed a change in them. A change in behavior and feelings or something that they have said that might have alerted you. It is important to simply describe what you have observed rather than use words that convey judgment, such as good and bad. If the person feels judged, they might feel embarrassed or withdrawal. Be honest and genuine in your concern.
Here's a few other things to consider. Acknowledge that you understand that the person is experiencing a lot of pain at present.
Show respect and be as understanding as possible about their situation. Maintain eye contact and open body language.
When discussing suicide, ensure that you listen carefully to what they have to say. Use active listening techniques, such as paraphrasing what the person has said, reciting it back to them, and ensuring you understand them.
Avoid minimizing or dismissing their problems. Ensure they know you're talking with them seriously.
Avoid using statements such as, "You don't know how lucky you are," or "You shouldn't feel like that." These might sound to the person as though you are judging them and minimizing how they are feeling.
Remind the person that although they may be having thoughts of suicide, they can choose not to act on them.
Offer realistic hope. It is possible for situations to improve or change for the better. It is likely that problems that they're having weren't created overnight. Therefore, the situation will probably take some time to resolve.
But their problem is resolvable through other means. If they are feeling suicidal, the next step is to support them to get professional help.
Please write down the phone numbers on your screen for the National Suicide Prevention Hotline and the Clackamas County Suicide Prevention Hotline. We can make a difference. We can save lives.
I'm here at Advantage Mortgage with Derek Hill. And Derek, you were telling me about something that just came down from Fannie Mae that people might be interested in.
Yeah, Fannie Mae just came out with a report that said that the average homeowner in the United States has approximately 70% equity in their home.
Oh, wow.
Right. I mean, that's obviously average throughout the whole country. But because values have come up so substantially in the last 10 years, there is a ton of equity available that people can utilize.
Cool. So if people are potentially like looking to buy or move into a new home, you're saying that equity means it might be something that you would look at remodeling instead of if the market's not looking favorable to you.
Right, 100%. Because the market in Portland is so tough to buy, you know, we have an average of like 2.5 months worth of inventory, so it's just super hard for people to find what they're looking for. It may be just easier for them to take out some equity and do the upgrades or do an addition or pay off some debt or lots of different things. And that's one of the things that we love to do with people is sit down with them and kind of go over a game plan. You know, that's one of the biggest things is knowing what you can do. And we love taking the time to do that for people.
Awesome. Awesome. And people can find you on your website or just give you a call.
They can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we love to chit chat. And we have, you know, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
So just remember, Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183, Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, equal housing opportunity.
I've been told that there's something special about the connection between a dad and a daughter, and that includes the way that she makes you dance with her every time she hears music. There will be a lot of that happening at the upcoming Daddy-Daughter Dance hosted by the Canby Rotary Club. And joining us now are the their dads, Ray Keene and Matt Nelson, to tell us all about this unique addition to the Canby scene.
I wanted to start, Ray, see if you could tell us just a little bit about Canby Rotary, what you guys do, and maybe your involvement with it.
Canby Rotary does amazing work in the community. We've been serving the community for over 40 years. It's pretty phenomenal to think about all the things that Rotary does, but scholarships at the high school to work projects, service projects all around town, just at the place where I am at the Canby Center. Rotarians came with their hammers and muscle and tore out walls and helped us remodel our kitchen and came a few months later with paintbrushes in hand. And just an amazing job in helping us out with that. But Rotary does lots of things all around the world, helping to eradicate polio and other diseases, serving in countries and bringing fresh water to families who need that. Just a ton of work in communities like Canby, but also all around the globe.
Yeah, you see like the kind of the Rotary logos and stuff. You can see that at a few places around town, but really there's not very many things in Canby that doesn't have some fingerprint from the Rotary Club. You guys do a lot of really good work. What about you, Matt? How long have you been part of Rotary and how did you kind of get involved?
Well, my wife and I actually joined just over about a year ago, and we have really enjoyed our time there. We've been involved with some of the Christmas activities with the Toy and Joy folks at the Kiwanis, and we also helped out with the Nothing But Net in the summertime. And it's just been a really, really fun time getting to know all the members and seeing the impact that we have locally, kind of sometimes behind the scenes. We did the post office, postal food short. I can't think of the name.
Stamp Out Hunger.
Yes, the Stamp Out Hunger.
A great name.
So Stamp Out Hunger with that. And it was a lot of fun. We really enjoyed being part of it. It's a lot of fun.
So there's an event coming up that's a Rotary event that I think is new to you guys. You want to tell us a little bit about it, Ray?
That'd be great. It's the first year for a Daddy-Daughter Dance. It's going to be amazing. It's happening on March 14th. It's a Saturday, 6 p.m. from 6 till 9. And I just cannot wait. I bought a ticket for me and my daughter, and we're going to go. It's really, I think, mostly for younger girls, you know, on up through and maybe reaching into middle school-ish, something in that range. But there's going to be all kinds of great stuff that night. It's going to be so fun for everyone who comes. I think from the food, which includes a chocolate fountain.
Of course.
To, you know, just having a DJ and lights and having a great time there. We're going to have special folks come in and do dance lessons for everyone. Some shorter dance lessons. I think we're getting a visit from a local world-renowned magician who's going to do a little show for us that night.
Oh, nice.
And there's going to be a photo booth and just other stuff that dads and daughters can do together to really connect. What's really cool, actually, what I'm really looking forward to is this is something I can do with my daughter. I don't dance well. She dances better than I do. And the tables get turned, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, so often we're the ones who are kind of in the know and we sort of set the course through the day and this is what's supposed to happen. But maybe we'll be a little bit more even footing while we go to the dance.
Yeah, not evil.
Not evil.
Even footing. Yeah, that is cool. It is nice to give the girls a chance to sort of be on stage and kind of take the lead in that way. Whereas normally, like you said, they're kind of just following dad's lead or whatever. A daddy-daughter dance is not really a new thing. I think maybe Cambi has had them before. Other communities have had them. What was kind of the idea, maybe Matt, behind something like this as far as the appeal of it or kind of the reason for the Rotary thought something like that would be a good idea for Cambi.
Well, from what I understand, we've been kind of watching the Silverton Rotary group, and they've been doing it for several years, and it's been a really, really exciting and well-received community event.
Yeah.
And we thought, well, if Silverton's doing it and they're having that success, why shouldn't we try that in Cambi and see if we can have similar success here in this community?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if Silverton can do it, we can do it. So we're going as well.
Awesome.
Ellie, yeah, my daughter is all about dresses and dancing and stuff like that. And as you guys can see, I mean, she just is all about dad. And I think that that's something that's kind of a part of this as well. It's just that special bond that dads and daughters seem to have. So
I think this is the moment in the interview where I take over. And I have to interview you.
You always take over my interviews, right?
What is more fun for you, eating chocolate or dancing with your dad?
I don't know.
That's pretty tough. I know.
That's a hard one.
Yeah,
that's a tough one. I go chocolate.
Maybe with the chocolate.
I go chocolate on that one. Yeah,
do
I would.
Do you like to dance?
Yeah. I dance. I used to be. Where was it?
It was ballet.
Ballet.
Yeah, Allegro.
Allegro, and my teacher name was Ellie.
Oh,
same
wow.
name.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is awesome. What kind of dancing do you like to do?
I don't know.
Any kind that you bounce around, something like that? Or do you like to spin?
Like leap.
Leaps are pretty awesome. Those are Matt's favorite too.
Yeah,
yeah.
I've seen Ray do some leaps, I think. Ellie really likes to put on, she has a Belle dress from Beauty and the Beast. She likes to put that on.
And
she comes down the steps as Belle, and I, of course, am the Beast. And we just recreate that dance.
That's good.
But she just loves to dance with Daddy. I mean, it's just, like I was saying, kind of a special bond. You know, gets me a little bit in the feels as well. I think it's pretty sweet.
Yeah. And that dress is special to me because we got it at the Disney store.
Oh, yeah.
And,
that's cool.
And it was actually for my birthday.
Now you get to wear it again.
Nice for the Disney store to get a little free advertising. I mean,
from
this, they need it. They're really
hurting.
For Disney.
Poor Mickey.
Well, anything else you'd like to say, Ellie?
And also, and my birthday is a Frozen 2 birthday.
That's right. It's going to be a Frozen 2 birthday.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
But I do think it's great for the community to, or for you guys to create something like this for the community again, just to, there's so much like in kind of our culture and society that pressure on girls, right? That tells them how to be and stuff like this. And to create a night that sort of is just for them and just to let them, you know, it's okay to, if you want to dance, if you want to dress up, if you want to be a princess, you know, it's, anything else going on that night that we should talk about?
I think, you know, you mentioned the impact it'll have on the daughters, but I think it's a big impact on the dads as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of cultural pressure for fathers, you know, to provide for the family. And sometimes dads really get kind of tuned into that and they kind of miss out on a lot of other things. And this kind of gives a spot for both daddy and daughter to pause, put the life, you know, all those things you need to take care of off to the side and focus on what's really important.
Right.
And spending time with your kids is absolutely wonderful. And having that, like you say, the special daddy-daughter bond, it goes definitely both ways. I'm, you know, certainly looking forward to having that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for saying that. I mean, it is like the pressure and the financial pressure. It's why I went into podcasting, obviously, you know, just the pressure to make money.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's just always constant. But,
and all those gold coins you have under your desk now.
Yeah. What about you, Ray? Any final thoughts or anything to tell folks about when you think about this night?
Yes. Yeah. I would just say, you know, folks can go to canbyrotary.com
and to get
they
tickets.
Can buy tickets right there through our website. So it's really easy to do. There's a couple things to know. One is that you can buy a ticket for you and your daughter. And if you have additional daughters you want to come with you that night, that's awesome too. There's a way to do that. And we are doing two sessions just before the dance happens. It's a couple weeks before, that allow dads and daughters to come out and do a dance lesson together. So if you'd like to kind of get your steps in tune before the night of, there's a great way to do that.
I might need that.
That's going to be great.
Yeah.
So the daddy-daughter dance is on March 14th, Saturday night, 6 to 9 p.m. at the Ackerman Center.
Yeah.
And we are going to be in like three of the big rooms there. It's going to kind of be all spread out and awesome.
I've heard rumors also that granddads and granddaughters can come as well. I'm not sure if that's
absolutely possible. Absolutely. Yeah. So. It's really open to anybody who feels like this needs to be a special night in connection with your daughter. So feel free to do that.
Dress up, dress down. It's really just whatever you guys feel comfortable.
Just come dressed.
Dressed would be good. That's the only standard.
A magical evening.
What is the theme of the evening?
The theme of the daddy-daughter dance.
Thank you.
Is a magical, a magical evening. That's what we're going to have. It's truly a magical evening. I can't wait to see how it's going to be decorated. The committee's been meeting for months and working on lighting and all this kind of stuff. It's going to be really, really special.
Yeah. And a fun night, and just a fundraiser as well for the Rotary. And
yeah, I hope so.
Well, thank you, Ray and Matt, and of course, Ellie.
Hi.
Thanks, Ellie. Say bye.
But Bill, he kept a-travelin' and trailin' up his sheep. And he knew that he was ailin', for at night he couldn't sleep. He thought he saw a woman come a-floatin' from above, and Bill was morally certain he'd discovered puppy love. So he went and bought a diamond and hit for Silver Creek. He took it from his pocket and he pinned it on her neck. She took it and she shook it and stamped it on the floor, and Bill was positive certain she didn't love him anymore. That's an excerpt from Old Bill Brown, a poem by Lester Wilson and James Earl Smith, circa 1930. Well, hey there, friends. This is the Can Be Then segment, and it's brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. They're open daily, and you can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grand Street in downtown Canby. A brief break from our series looking at the history of Canby's parks this week as we revisit an earlier story. Longtime listeners will remember our previous series recounting the incredible life of William Old Bill Brown, the kid from a New Era farm near Canby who grew up to become, for a time, the legendary, quote, Horse King of the West, overcoming adversities that would have broken the hearts of weaker and more conventional men. He amassed an empire of almost 40,000 acres across four counties in central and eastern Oregon that he owned outright, with an additional 100,000 acres he controlled through water rights. His prized herds of wild horses numbered as many as 10,000, only a rough estimate because Bill kept no records, and he kept upwards to 30,000 sheep and other animals that formed a lucrative wool business. His annual income in those days, as near as anyone could tell, was $140,000, a sum worth several million today. With his lands, animals, and other operations, we would roughly estimate his net worth at somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 million in today's money. In 1914, he built a fine new home on his main headquarters at the Buck Creek Ranch. It had 8 bedrooms, an office, indoor plumbing, and a dining room table that sat 12. It was known as one of the most finely furnished homes in the western half of the country. It was a home built for the wife and the family that he sadly never had. So today, in honor of Valentine's Day, we share the story of Bill Brown's lost love. The tale comes from Roy Stauffer, an old Union rancher and former homesteader in the high desert, as recounted to author Ralph Friedman in his 1970 book, A Touch of Oregon. Roy was one of the few people who Bill knew in his prime when he acquired the reputation of being a colorful character, even, you might say, eccentric. Quote, "There was a story that Bill Brown had only one sock during those hard times," Roy remembered, referring to the exceptionally hard winter of 1889 when Bill Brown lost all but 500 of his 10,000 sheep. They say he wore it on one foot one day and on the other foot the next day. See, Roy worked for Bill as a horse wrangler. "There's no one sport in the world as exciting as rounded up wild horses," he said. "If you're raised in that country and you feel a certain attachment to wild horses, when you've got a good saddle horse and you take off after a wild horse, I'll tell you, it's fun. It's a chase." Old Bill once had a chase of his own, but the prize wasn't a wild horse. No, it was something much more precious than that. The love of a young lady, and her name was Myra Shields. It was a story, according to Ray Stauffer, that had never been told before. "Oh, he fell deeply in love with her," Roy said. "Bill Brown came to our house once and stayed about 3 hours and was telling my dad all about his love affair. He said that when he was out herding the sheep, he could see her flying above them like an angel." "Oh, so what happened?" "Well, we'll tell you. You see, Myra was a good 26 years younger than old Bill. And according to biographers, Bill always wanted to marry a younger girl so he could, quote, breed her in the fall and lamb her in the spring. His way of thinking, not surprisingly, wasn't acceptable to any lady that he met. Myra was the daughter of Judge Thomas and Julia Garrett Shields of Silver Creek and the oldest of 6 children. Bill was mighty stuck on her, as they say in those days, and when a man owns 40,000 acres of land and 10,000 wild horses, I guess it's oh natural that he might start to think he can get whatever he wants. He came to see her, wearing a nice brand new suit that he'd just bought in Burns. Legend says that he actually wore it over his old clothes, with his work pants showing through. "He had one suspender over the new suit and one over the old clothes," Roy recalled. But then, Bill made his mistake. He had this diamond locket that he had custom made in the shape of his brand, that famed horseshoe bar. It was a symbol that was immediately recognizable anywhere in the high desert, and he guarded it with the ruthlessness that would have impressed Steve Jobs. He refused to sell horses to his neighbors or anyone who planned to use them in Oregon, and so any horse in the state bearing the horseshoe bar was presumed to be the property of Bill Brown. Bill took this special diamond locket to Myra, clasped it around her neck, and said, "Anything that wears the horseshoe brand belongs to me." Well, that was his idea of a marriage proposal, but not exactly the stuff of romantic tearjerkers, eh? Pro tip this Valentine's Day, if you're looking to impress your sweetheart with an expensive gift, don't accompany it with a metaphor likening her to the beast of burden. Myra ripped the locket from her neck, breaking the chain in the process, and threw it on the ground. Heartbroken, Bill picked up the locket and left, never to see her again. Instead, Myra married a Joseph Vanderpool 3 years later. The couple had 6 children and moved to California in 1918, where Myra died in 1961. It's said that Bill was so in love with Myra that after her rejection, he began seeing images of her face in the sky while he was out herding sheep. Much later, he told Roy's father that he hadn't gotten out of life what he thought he should, by which Roy guessed he meant a wife and kids. Once one of the most eligible bachelors west of the Mississippi, Bill Brown never married. He died in 1941, 85 years old, and completely penniless. "Yeah, you know, it's kind of a funny thing about Bill Brown," Roy Stauffer later mused. "He was a mighty independent man and didn't like anybody to put a halter on him. He could appreciate wild horses wanting to be free. And here's he's treating Myra Shields, who was as independent in spirit as he was, just like a stock animal. I spec Bill didn't know much better. Maybe that was the biggest tragedy in his life. Being too close to sheep to know how to deal with a woman. Oh well, happens to the best of us, I suppose. Well, happy Valentine's Day to all you lovers in Canby, and much love and appreciation to all of our singles as well. We'll catch you next time on Canby Then.
Hey Tyler, so it's February, and you know what that means. You know, there's a certain feeling in the air.
Oh yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, tax Valentine.
What? Valentine's?
No, I was saying tax day is coming up for when you file.
Oh, but it's also Valentine's, you know.
Oh man, I might need to call my wife real quick. I might be in trouble.
Okay, well, if you're looking for some place to have a fun date night, you can always try the Wild Hair Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun. They've been in business for over 16 years, serve a fresh, locally sourced menu, and donate over $20,000 to Canby Sports and other causes each year. Check them out just off of Highway 99E next to Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or just go to their website, thewildhairsaloon.net.
Hey, honey, so good news, bad news. Good news, we got our taxes filed early this year.
The Canby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.